Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, we'll be taking a look at several important issues involving not just our well-being, but the well-being of the planet and a lot of the systems that we take for granted. For example, I'm sure that most of you have heard on various reports or seen possibly in passing the nature of some of the demonstrations that have occurred in Italy concerning groups meeting there to discuss international financial policies for the future. Now, generally, the media slant is that these are people who are either terrorists in nature or very radical, and therefore whatever the police is doing is to maintain some sense of order and stability. However, if we left the story there, we would never know what the real demonstration was about, as we didn't in Seattle or in Washington. And as a result, we would continue to allow 95% of these people to be young, more often than not idealistic people, who, much like many of you at one time in your life, remember that, when you actually had ideals and weren't afraid to fight for them? Well, that's what they did. Now, some of you actually participated in something a little less selfish than just your own personal pursuit. Where most Americans are today, go around the world, ask the average person who is fighting for their rights, who have very few freedoms, what does it mean to have all the freedom you want, to do whatever you want, say whatever you want, whenever you want, and not realize how certain power groups are encroaching upon that? So when you actually go to these events, which I have, and you demonstrate and you speak with people who are demonstrating, they come from all walks of life. That is not to suggest that they're all peaceful or that they're all aware fully. Many of them are simply drawn to these radical incursions, but the vast majority are very conscientious. They're doing it because they fear what happens if people don't address these issues. I'd like to give you some perspectives today. The first, to give you the news that you haven't heard about in a little more detail, because the network news just doesn't have the time to report it in a short format where it must cover several episodes. This comes from the Independent Media Center, the Ad Hoc on Genoa Solidarity Committee. On early Sunday morning, Italian police stormed an IMP press office armed with tear gas and batons. Italian military police and unknown provocateurs simultaneously raided the school building across the street that had hosted various groups participating in the Genoa Social Forum. Persons in the IMF or the IMC at the time of the raid were forced to stand against the wall with their hands up while police searched equipment and personal effects. Reports vary on the number of injuries sustained by IMC staff. IMC Italia reports that one IMC reporter from the United Kingdom is hospitalized with serious injuries from the attacks. Materials reportedly seized during the raid include audio mini discs, videotapes, and computer hard drives. Other reports allege that telecommunications equipment was damaged and/or destroyed during the raid. In the same building, the police also raided the Radio Gap radio station and forced it off the air for a short time. The neighboring school building hosted GSF organizers who were where the worst violence occurred. Eyewitnesses claimed that around 50 black-clad provocateurs first entered the street in front of the school, overturning dumpsters and creating chaos. Then they removed their black sweatshirts and entered the school and began beating those inside indiscriminately. Most of the beatings were savage in nature, and again were not done by uniformed police, but by characters dressed in jeans and bandanas and helmets with police written on their t-shirts. Hundreds of Italian police sealed off the street, and a helicopter flew low overhead as if on military operation. Press and attendance was kept back at a distance. Many individuals were awakened from their sleep and lined up against walls, hands over their heads. The ensuing brutal assault lasted for over 45 minutes. Horrible screams in the building could be heard on the streets below. Afterwards, the floors and walls were covered in blood. 20 wounded were carried out, many on stretchers, and 3 were unconscious, according to BBC reporter Bill Hayton, who was present during the raid. The injured were taken to ambulances that arrived with the police. Reports today indicate over 50 injured. Police claim to have authority to enter and search the buildings for weapons under Article 41, an anti-terrorist act. Later, an Italian MP, Luisa Mortandati, arrived and told the police they had no such authority since the school resided on state-owned property. It was at this point the police and provocateurs left the building. The Genoa Social Forum held a press conference Sunday morning concerning details of the raid. Volunteer lawyers for activists report that computers were destroyed and that police stole information during the raid that related to their organizational work, including the transcripts of testimonies. Materials were also confiscated from the IMC offices that might have provided legal documentation of police abuses in the preceding days. One lawyer said the police blitz to the contrary was based upon abuse of rights in a climate of terror. Throughout the day Sunday, the IMC Newswire contained reports of continued police beatings of activists in Genoa, both in the streets and in jails. Reports indicate many injured demonstrators are fearful to seek treatment in hospitals since police have been removing people with unexplained wounds and taking them to jail. At present, over 500 people are missing and unaccounted for. Now, just a little insight on this. Who are these people? Are they terrorists? Are they concerned citizens? And if they're concerned, what concern do they have that the rest of us are not aware of? I would like to... let me give you a little background, additional background. The recent raid on the Indy Media Center in Genoa is the latest in a series of intimidations and threats to this movement of independent media centers. As the Indy Media movement has grown, it has been subject to increasing repression. From the first days in Seattle, when the IMC received a tear gas attack, there have been indications that authorities identified the IMC movement as a target to intimidate and silence. At the IMC in Los Angeles during the August 2000 Democratic National Convention, a police raid closed down the satellite van that was scheduled to uplink live IMC television to a national grassroots community television network. In Prague, the Czech police raided the IMC offices, harassing and intimidating journalists and others. And during the days preceding the Bush inauguration, D.C. police sent spy provocateur agents to IMC D.C. meetings. More recently, during the FTAA protest, the FBI visited the Seattle IMC with a request for all computer logs and gag order injunction demanding that no news of the request be made public on the net. The IMC in Quebec also suffered police harassment and an attack in which tear gas was fired into the center. Less than a month later, shortly after the Cincinnati uprising over police brutality last spring, police served an order on a coordinator in the Ohio Valley IMC, also requesting records and tape logs and to appear before a grand jury. The IMC gained a victory for the independent press community when these injunctions were withdrawn by the FBI after the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the Center for Constitutional Rights, and the Electronic Privacy Information Center intervened to support the IMC. The IMC Global Network will continue to fight hard to protect the rights of independent journalists around the world and to ensure that the voices of our many diverse communities are accurately and respectfully covered and made available to the rest of the world. As stated in Article 19 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, everyone has the right to the freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. Now, what is happening, and it's happening in a rather insidious way, is that there is no longer a Democratic Party that protects the public. I wish there were. I'm appalled and embarrassed by its lack of decency and honor and ethics to the common person. And the Republicans have never made an excuse for doing that. So where does that leave the average person? It leaves them in a quandary of whatever business wants, business gets, because now there's one party, the business party. Plain and simple. Now, you can, from the comfort of an Ivy League school, and I just emailed an academic this morning who had sent me a series of questions, how nice it is to make judgments from the sanctity of a university where you don't meet the real world in the same way those who have to actually earn a living in a different way do. And that's why I rather stay away from academics. I find them abhorrent on and so lacking in intellectual honesty and very self-righteous in everything they believe. Let them go into the streets. Let them go to the villages. Let them learn something out of life instead of a textbook that can be extremely biased. Let them stop imparting false and misleading information to their students who are sopping it up as if it is a truism. The trouble is the average American has not taken the time or the effort or the desire to see whether or not any of their preconceived notions of right or wrong are right or wrong. So we believe elections are fair. They are never fair. We believe because whoever has the most money generally wins, or whoever is able to convince us of the most negative impact upon the other person wins, or whoever has the best corporate sponsorship of soft money wins. Where is there anything democratic in that whole process? In a democratic election, you should have a school teacher, a bus driver, a police officer, a nurse, a mechanic, all having the same opportunity to run for an office and to represent the people. When was the last time that happened? Rare exception, and especially today with over $1 billion being spent in the last total campaigns for Senate, Governor, and President. Over $400 million just for President. Nobody likes anybody that much. It's a lottery. You gain something. Well, who gains it? Well, of course, the special interest groups. But which special interest group is almost never, never the focus of attention? The banks. Why? Well, because banks don't have the faces that humans do. Banks don't have illicit affairs. And I'm appalled by this entire sordid effort, and purely for purient's sake, on this Democrat out in California, on his affair with this woman. If you're going to be fair, then report on the other 100,000 missing children, women, and men each year. I remember when there was an attack around the reservoir and a woman was brutalized. That was bad. What was worse than that were during the same period of time the news was covering this daily in headlines, and she was a Wall Street white woman in her 30s, there were over 400 black and Latino women who were also beaten, raped, savaged, many murdered. Not a word. I consider that extreme, in that we will pounce on a story because of the social positioning and the celebrity status of the people, which means that we really don't give a damn about the larger ethics of it. It shows where we've gone morally as a society, into the toilet. I don't know if we can get any lower. I don't know. If we crawl under a lawyer's belly, we could get lower. Below that, I don't think anything exists. So let's not pretend that we really care about someone or something. We don't, as a rule. There are exceptions, and those exceptions are probably about 3 to 5% of the population. And we certainly don't care enough about issues to find out what's behind them. If tomorrow the word was that we're going to eliminate currencies, for our own good, of course, and there'll be a lot of justifications, organized crime can't use the cash, it'll cause drug trafficking to cease, all those will be the excuses. But in the reality, they have been working towards a cashless chip society, a chip the size of a grain of rice, within the next 10 years, will be offered to be put under everyone's skin, generally between the forefinger and thumb, in that little web there, and that will become the currency. Well, how many people do you think are going to protest that? Let me tell you how many. The same number of people who protested anything. About 1%. How many people protested civil rights? 1%. The women's movement? 0.5%. The Vietnam War? Under 0.5%. Take the total population divided by the total number of protests. Now, it doesn't mean that 0.5% or 1% is ineffective. The only reason we even have any sanity left in our society today, any ethics whatsoever, is because of that 0.5%. The 99%, they do nothing to maintain diligence over the higher standard. They consume. And the bankers are smart enough to realize the power of consumption without question. Buy what you don't need. Create obsolescence. Create diseases that don't exist, like ADD and ADHD and schizophrenia, including most depressions. Give them drugs. Well, nothing can happen in America unless someone finances it. Behind everything, ultimately, is an institution. The institution has been so well guarded, it's been so disguised, that no one ever looks at what is really behind all this. We only see the faces that pop up here and there, and we think, oh, they're responsible. Think again. These people are also merely parts of groups. I'd like to read you an article that comes from Arthur Ramos. Arthur's a professor, author. These are his points of view. And when people send me things, about 3 o'clock this morning, I was writing a new book on the meaning beyond the meaning of life. It'll be out in about a year. I'm halfway through it. Trying to figure out why people are just not smarter than what they, why their actions are always a lot less valued than their capacity to think. We can think well, we can know well, we just don't do well. So I'm writing a book on that. Anyhow, I had remembered something on this issue of banking, and I went back to my notes and back in 1968. In fact, it was 1998, October 6, 1998, I'd received a letter from Arthur, and he had just heard a series of programs I did on the 12 Federal Reserve Banks. I did a 5-part series on that, and he added an article. I read the article and then thought, does he have an update? I called him early this morning, and he did. He sent me the update. I'd like to share it with you, because behind those demonstrations are issues. Not one single mainstream media covered the issues. They only covered the brutality, and even then, not from an objective point of view. What was it all about? Why were those people there? Why are they concerned? Why were we in Washington, D.C.? What was our concern? Why were we in Seattle? What was our concern? And why were we just in the thousands when we have a country of 280 million people? And why didn't 99.99% of the population even want to know what we were doing, let alone come and join us, including the unions, with a token exception? Nothing is what it used to be, and nothing is as it seems. This article is entitled, Who's Running America? Who's calling the shots? Who's dictating our future? Your first response may be the government, mega corporations, Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, etc., or a combination of these groups. Similar questions were asked a leading English banker in the early 1800s about England. Here's his reply. I care not what puppet is placed upon the throne of England to rule the empire on which the sun never sets. The man who controls Britain's money supply controls the British Empire, and I control the British money supply. You may consider the above statement as arrogant and exaggerated. Unfortunately, it is the truth. The effects of money on an economy are so enormous that during a war between nations, there is usually a plan to flood the enemy's cities with perfectly copied counterfeit money. Introducing a gigantic amount of money into the economy would destroy the value of that currency. If the money supply collapses, the economy and war effort would collapse. All of our commerce is based upon money. Whoever controls the amount or volume of money in our economy controls the country. Interest rates, home mortgages, loans, employment, prices, production, salaries, bankruptcies, your family's well-being and your health are all tied into our monetary system. An overstatement? No, an understatement. Let's look at the Federal Reserve Board. Our government has the authority, from the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 5, to create and regulate money. However, Congress abdicated its directive and shifted this awesome power to privately owned banks in 1913 and created a monster called the Federal Reserve System, commonly called the Fed. Contrary to popular belief, the Fed is not a government agency. The system consists of thousands of privately owned local banks and 12 privately owned regional banks called the Federal Reserve Banks, which oversee the local banks. It's a bizarre relationship because the overseer, the reserve banks, are owned by the local banks. Congress has standing banking committees, and the Senate confirms the 7 members of the Board of Governors of the Reserve. However, the system is so designed that Congress has little power over the Fed's decisions. Supposedly, the Board of Governors, which convene in Washington, D.C., make the critical decisions. Actually, the 36 Class A directors, which are all bankers, and the 12 presidents of the Federal Reserve Banks, are calling the shots. Bankers have complete control over our money system and therefore our economy. Most of our money enters the market as an interest-bearing loan from a bank. This money can be called bank money and is usually transacted with checks or by computer. Briefly and simply, local banks create money out of thin air when someone takes out a loan. When the loan is paid back, money is taken out of circulation and destroyed. This is all monitored by careful bank bookkeeping. It's important to realize that depositors' money is not loaned out. The money created is new money. Local banks add to the money supply when a loan is made and subtract from the money supply when a loan is paid off. Federal Reserve banks also create money out of thin air. When they purchase assets such as bonds, stocks, foreign money, or whatever, these purchases usually result in money being deposited into local banks. This allows the local banks to create money through their loan practices. The Fed also has monetary mechanisms for removing money from the money supply, which they occasionally use. Needless to say, creating money from thin air and manipulating money is a very profitable business for the banks, particularly for the large banks and the reserve banks. Most people believe that paper money, meaning dollars, is government money. Not true. Paper money is just another form of bank money. The banker's paper money, meaning bank notes, is printed by the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, which is part of the U.S. Treasury. The Treasury functions as a job shop, simply printing paper currency on orders from the regional Federal Reserve banks. It costs the banks pennies for each bill printed, regardless of the denomination. For example, to purchase $1 million in $100 bills cost $400. This deceptive practice, having the Treasury print the bills, is to give the public the impression that our money is created by our government and therefore is intrinsically valuable. The bottom line is the Federal Reserve notes are the bank's creation, and the banks are in full control of this money. Coinage Act of 1965 made banknotes legal tender. Now, when it comes to metal coins, the Treasury also manufactures coins, of course, at the request of the Federal Reserve Bank. The good news is that the government is given full credit for the face value of these metal coins. This money can, in some sense, be considered as government money. It is a small fraction of the total money supply, however. It shows that the government can legally create its own money. Is the Fed doing a good job of running our economy? No. Actually, they're ruining our economy. The reserve system doesn't work. It's unsound in several respects. One fundamental flaw is, which is true for all profit-making organizations, is that the Fed's decisions are based upon their profit and their survival. The impact on the nation's people is of secondary importance, if at all considered. Let's look at the economic record. The reserve system first opened its doors in 1914. A few years later, in 1920, the Fed orchestrated the Farm Depression, which bankrupted many farmers. Next came the Great Depression in 1929 to 1941, which was in part caused and prolonged by the Fed. After the stock market crash of October 29, 1929, the Fed deliberately created a money shortage. Without enough money in circulation, the nation's economy collapsed. More than 30% of our workforce was unemployed during this period. World War II from 1941 to 45 ended the Depression and created an economic boom, which lasted well beyond the end of the war. The Fed regained its power in the early 1950s and helped to cause the national recessions of 1954, 58, 60, 62, 66, 70, 74, 81, and 91, which has caused untold misery for many people. Add to this lousy record the countless local recessions at the town, city, and regional levels caused by the lending policies of the local banks. Unbeknown to the general public, bank loans to foreign countries are backed by us, the taxpayers. If a country defaults on its loan, as many have, we, the taxpayers, must make good on it in order to keep these large private banks solvent. Remember the recent Mexico bailout? Our president, Bill Clinton, in effect, gave a gift of $50 million from us to a corrupt Mexican system, mainly to save his Wall Street investors and bankers. It was so blatant, so perverse, and yet, where was the major media? And let's not forget the wide and devastating bank failures of the 1980s, requiring a massive $500 billion in taxpayer money to bail them out. Our huge public and private debt, our devalued dollar, our inflated interest rates are ruining federal, state, and local taxing systems, and much, much more are all related to our defective money system. Now, our banks do not serve our communities or our nations. They are now international players in a global money casino. Are there other money systems at work? Yes. Yes, there are. One system, which is constitutionally based, would have the government the sole creator of money under the
And you're tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. We'll be back to the second half of Natural Living with Gary Null in just a moment.
Belongs on the defective Federal Reserve System. Who should be in charge? Well, the group that creates the real wealth of any nation is the people. Through their sweat, brawn, and brains, they create America every day. Direct control of our money system by the populace is probably impractical. The next best is our elected representatives to Congress. Here, unfortunately, there's a major hitch. Many of our representatives don't represent the general public. Instead, they represent special interest groups, usually ones with lots of money. So before the money system can be corrected, our constitutional representatives must be overhauled. What can we do to change things? We cannot expect the people who are benefiting from our present economic system to change it. Like it or not, the burden of initiating change falls on us, the common folk, as it has been. Educate yourself about the issues. Network with others. Form or join local political action groups to seek reform. Let the news media and your representatives know your views. That's one perspective. I'm Gary Null, trying to let you know about issues that are not getting the attention they deserve. And therefore, if they're not getting the attention, then people, unfortunately, are in the dark on this. Bank money is money created by banks. Practically all the money in use today is bank money. It comes in various forms: checks, bank notes, we call them dollars, and reserves. A reserve is a label, a name given to money which is held by banks. A $1 bill held by a bank teller is considered a $1 reserve. The moment the teller hands over $1 to the general public, the name changes to simply a dollar. And So I want you to understand the labels. We have all type of labels, and people really don't know what the labels mean. Let me give you an idea of this. We shall assume a reserve ratio of 10%. Reserve ratios for our purposes can be defined as reserve divided by deposit. This means that a $10,000 checking account, a demand deposit account at a local bank is backed by $1,000. That's 10,000 times 10% is 1,000 reserve. Further, if a local bank has $20,000 excess reserve, the bank can legally create an account 10 times this amount, or $200,000. Since we have multiple ownerships of banks, a loan of this magnitude would be unwise because the local bank could end up losing 200,000 other banks. This can be extremely embarrassing to the bank since they only have $20,000 on their books. So, let's look at how the Fed creates a check. Let's start the expansion of money by having the Federal Reserve Bank of New York purchase a $10,000 treasury bill from Mr. A. The result would be similar if the Reserve Bank purchased anything, including a $10,000 painting from Mr. A. The Federal Reserve pays for this security with a $10,000 federal check drawn on itself. When the check is returned to the Reserve for full approval, a fund approval, there'll be no trouble clearing it. No trouble indeed. They are the creators and approvers of this money. This privately owned institution has created $10,000 from thin air and has acquired an asset, an interest-bearing treasury bill from Mr. A. Not a bad deal for the bank. Let's backtrack a bit. Mr. A receives the $10,000 federal check and deposits it into a checking account of Bank A. At this point, $10,000 has been added to the money supply. Money supply is the money that we use every day. It is easily transferred, such as cash or checking account money. Incredible as it may seem, the Federal Reserve Bank, after receiving Mr. A's check via Bank A, creates a $10,000 account out of thin air and labels this mysterious creation a reserve. This $10,000 reserve is credited to Bank A's reserve account at its regional Federal Reserve Bank. Now, a brief summary of the bank account has created from thin air. 1. A $10,000 Fed check, which paid for the treasury bill. 2. A $10,000 reserve account, which matches the $10,000 deposit placed in Bank A. Do you get the creepy feeling that there's a gigantic flim-flam scheme going on here at our expense? Actually, the big magic performed by the local banks is just beginning. Let's look at the big magic, how it begins. Back to Bank A and Mr. A's deposit. Since the reserve ratio is 10%, a $1,000 reserve is considered sufficient to cover Mr. A's $10,000 account. This leaves $9,000 excess reserve available to leverage into loans and investments. Now, Bank A legally creates a $9,000 loan or bank credit and lends it out to Mr. A.A. Carefully note the $9,000 is created from nothing. No other private institution can legally do this. Although Bank A created a $9,000 deposit account, they did not create a $9,000 reserve. Only the reserve banks can create reserves and destroy reserves. Well, is deposit money safe? Be advised, according to the honorable banking community, Mr. A's $10,000 deposit money is very safe and was not used for this loan and can be fully withdrawn at any time. Further, this deposit has the backing of the government through the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, where bank deposits are guaranteed up to $100,000. Here we have an extreme example of government favoritism to a privately owned, profit-making institution. This type of guarantee has led to enormous abuses, encouraged non-accountability by the banks. Now, let's continue showing you how the magic goes on. Continuing with Bank A and Mr. AA's loan, Mr. AA signs a promissory note, an IOU to a bank. Bank A pledging some real asset for a loan that was fabricated from thin air. Bank A considers the loan package as an asset and can be sold to someone for a profit. Bank A then creates a checking account for Mr. AA. At this point, $9,000 is added to the nation's money supply. So far, the money supply has increased by $19,000. $10,000 plus $9,000. Mr. AA owes money to Mr. B, so he makes out a check for $9,000 to Mr. B. Mr. B deposits the $9,000 check into his checking account at Bank B. Assuming the check is cleared, Bank B reserves go up $9,000. The Reserve Bank simply transfers the $10,000 reserve from Bank A to Bank B's account. Bank A loses reserve, Bank B gains reserves. It's all just bookkeeping. When a check is transferred from one bank to another bank, there is an equal amount of reserve that tags along. Focusing on Bank B, Bank B is required to have $900 in reserve to cover Mr. B's $9,000 deposit. This leaves Bank B with an excess reserve of $8,100. Bank B now creates an $8,100 account and graciously grants Mr. BB a loan for $8,100. Of course, Mr. BB pledges to pay this loan back with interest. The money supply now jumps up by $8,100. Now the total is $27,100. Mr. BB makes out an $8,100 check to Mr. C, whom he owes money to. Mr. C deposits this check money into his account at Bank C. Bank B loses $8,100 in reserves to Bank C to cover the $8,100 deposits of Mr. C. Bank set aside $8,100 reserve. This leaves Bank C with $7,290 extra reserve. Bank C now can loan out $7,290. Mr. CC borrows $7,290 and from Bank C again the nation's money supply goes up, this time by $7,290. The total now is $334,390. By now you're probably mentally exhausted by these banking shenanigans. It's merely a geometric series. The pattern just discussed can be simply categorized as a cycle, a bank deposit loan cycle, where a deposit into a bank sets into motion the bank loan, the new loan money eventually becomes a bank deposit, and on it goes and diminishing each cycle by the required reserves. This pattern continues until all the $10,000 reserves are utilized. Once the loan has been finalized and a bank account set up, the money supply has been really increased. Each new loan is 90% of the previous loan. In mathematics, this is called geometric series. Here's a partial summary of loans. $9,000 to Bank A, $81 Bank B, $7,290 Bank C, $6,561 Bank D, $5,905 Bank E, and $5,314 Bank F, etc. Expansion via security purchase. Money expansion could also take place by banks purchasing treasury securities. Let us trace such a purchase. Instead of Bank A lending $9,000, the bank decides to purchase a $9,000 treasury security from Mr. B. Recall that Bank A has $9,000 excess reserves on hand due to Mr. A's $10,000 deposit. Now, Mr. B gets a $9,000 cashier's check from Bank A for his treasury security, and Bank A gets an interest-bearing security. Again, trading something for a fabricated bank check. Mr. B deposits this check into Bank B, and his checking account goes up $9,000. At this point, $9,000 has been added to the money supply. Bank A loses $9,000 in reserve to Bank B. Bank B is now in a position to lend $8,100 to a purchase of a security. Note that Bank B is now in the same financial position it was just prior to Mr. BB's loan. In summary, assuming that all the loans have been concluded, in a relatively short period of time, the money supply has been increased by $90,000 due to the magic of local banks. This expansion all started from the purchase of a $10,000 treasury bill by the Fed. If we were to consider the Fed's addition to the money supply, the total increase would be $100,000. A quick way to calculate the total money expansion is to divide the Fed's purchase, meaning reserve, by the reserve ratio. That is, $10,000 at 10% equals times 10% equals $100,000. To obtain the local bank's contribution, subtract the federal purchase from the total expansion. You get $90,000. When a bank loan is paid back, the principal and interest payments are removed, meaning extinguished from the money supply. And the reserves are not destroyed. It's a very complex system. one that is not well understood. Just let's take a look at interest money. One very serious flaw which plagues this expansion system is that the banks do not create the interest money. For instance, the local banks created a total of $90,000 in loans. They want back $97,200 a year using an 8% interest. The money supply is short. The interest payment, $7,200, was never created. Some borrowers, because of a lack of money in circulation, must default on their loans. The borrower's failures are not due to laziness or poor business decisions, but simply because there's not enough money available. New bank loans help to add more money to the economy, but this measure only forestalls the inevitable defaults. When local banks and reserve banks spend money through their expenditures into the economy, they're increasing the nation's money supply. Let us take an example. Bank X has an excess reserve of $500,000. The bank executives notice that over the years, more than 60% of the checks written from Bank X come back to the bank directly. That is, the person receiving the check, payee, holds a checking account at the same bank as the person originating the check, the payer. Further, these checks are actually fully deposited. There is a little cash withdrawn. Based on these facts and with $500,000 excess reserve, Bank X conservatively decides to pay for their expenditures with cashier officer checks up to a maximum of $1,085,000. Using these checks, Bank X humbly pays its salaries, rent, insurance, utilities, with emphasis on local businesses. The privately owned reserve banks have a better deal than this. They just write out their own Fed checks. Any amount is okay for any purpose. Unlike the local banks, the Fed does not have to consider reserves to cover their own checks. Of course, they don't overly abuse this subsidy. If the public caught on to this scam, they may be a little disturbed by it. This bank expenditure money, which is injected into the economy, is a significant amount of money, estimated in the billions. When a reserve bank writes a federal check, it is creating reserves, high-power money, which potentially has 10 times effect on increasing the money supply. This is not true for local banks' cashier checks. So that's just give you a little idea that this banking system is an extremely complex one, but it's all smoke and mirrors. So what the real issue right now is in Europe is you have is you have a group of individuals, the 15 European countries linked together by a common trade agreement, and they're all trying to create one kind of money supply, the euro. And Ireland's holding out, as is Denmark and England. This time, they don't want to give up their own currencies. Well, once you have a group of people who come together, as was the case with the World Trade Organization, you have to give up something. And part of what you give up is your sovereignty. And behind all of these international trade agreements is the sovereignty of local laws, national laws, and constitutional rights. Because right now, there is in place a monstrous organization that is in complete secrecy. If I mention a name, you wouldn't know who it was. These are not the people that you've been used to. These are bankers. These are people who finance multinational corporations. These are the people who own major interests in multinational corporations. It is really of secondary nature who runs them. The wealth of the people, with the exception of Bill Gates and a few others, but the wealth of the people who run these corporations is relatively minor. I read that Jack Welch, who's retiring in a few weeks from 41 years of running General Electric, the most powerful and wealthy corporation in the world, at $451 billion in assets, his total wealth at this point is about $150 million. That may seem like a lot, but not when you consider auction stock options and bonuses and everything else that would have been received over the years. Arguably the most respected person in the business community at this moment. There are people behind the scenes who have that as chump change. That doesn't even make a blip on their petty cash books. You have astronomical wealth in the hands of banking families and banking organizations.